Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Surviving Rain by Shea Savage, narrated by Sean Christen.
Chapter 1. Lost. My head was pounding, and I was pretty sure the whole room was spinning. Okay, it wasn't spinning, just rocking. Despite the copious amount of alcohol I'd ingested last night, a rocking room was normal, since I lived on my ship. That didn't exempt me from a hell of a hangover, though. I rolled over and let the temple-splitting pain run its course before forcing my body to comply with my wishes and rise from my bunk. I made my way over to the cubby-sized bathroom to relieve myself of whatever vodka was left in my system and wash some of the night grime from my face. If the passengers on this ship could see their captain in the morning, they'd probably disembark as quickly as possible. They might even be willing to charter a canoe to navigate the Caribbean instead. Not that I was going to look significantly better in the afternoon. I looked in the mirror, which was usually a mistake. This time was no exception. I hadn't shaved in a few days, and I looked like I felt, gritty and hungover. The pale blue irises that stared back at me were surrounded by red and dull from lack of real sleep. There was still a bit of a mark on one cheek from last week's bar fight in San Juan. After giving my teeth a quick once-over with the brush, I tossed on relatively clean cargo shorts and a rumpled polo shirt that was lying on top of the dresser. I looped my belt around my waist and headed out of the forecastle. At this ungodly hour of the morning, that is, about 7 o'clock a.m. ship time, I hoped not to run into anyone else. Usually, most of the passengers that chose to sail with me were not morning people, and I was free to walk about my home without running into them. Apparently, this trip had one early riser. A tiny little dark-haired girl with tanned legs curled up underneath her sat near the mainmast with a book in her lap. Weird. At least she was far enough aft and engrossed enough in her literature that she didn't notice me. I entered the pilot house and gave a nod to the nighttime helmsman.
"You look like shit,"
John Paul chuckled. At 6'4 and 200-plus pounds of solid muscle, you didn't argue with John Paul.
"Thanks," I replied.
John Paul was my one and only friend, which was perfectly fine with me. I had met him right after I graduated from high school out on a shooting range over 10 years ago. That's when I fucking loved guns. I had been good with them, too. Probably still was, though I hadn't pulled the trigger on one in quite a while. It's too easy. I'd rather use my fists if I really needed to.
"How's the ablation running?"
"Smooth as always,"
John Paul said, tilting his favorite cowboy hat back a little on his head. He looked me over and rubbed his fingers around on his chin, which was covered in fine dark hair.
"Any survivors?"
"I didn't wake up with anyone ugly,"
I replied, grabbing the pack of smokes off a short table next to the wheel. I pulled a lighter out of one of the pouches on my belt, right next to my favorite jackknife, and lit up.
"Well, that's a bonus at least,"
John Paul said. He handed the wheel over to me with a nod. I sat back on the stool, tossed one arm casually over the top of the wheel, and looked out over the bow at the slow-rolling waves of the Caribbean. I took a long drag and exhaled smoke off to one side.
"Remember that bitch in Puerto Rico?"
John Paul asked, as if I was going to forget her.
"You didn't even realize she was on the ship when we left."
John Paul chortled, and I cringed. I was stuck with her for 4 days until I could get her back. If I had just picked up a tourist or a local, that would have been one thing. But this one had been a working girl. Cost me a fucking fortune.
"She wasn't ugly," I mumbled.
"She wasn't hot either,"
John Paul said. All right, I had to give him that. At least I had made sure I got my money's worth once I realized I was stuck with her for a few days. She may not have been the hottest, but the chick had a tongue that wouldn't quit, and she sucked cock like, well, like a pro. Which she was.
"Fuck off and get some sleep,"
I told him. Thinking about it was making me a little uncomfortable in my shorts. I must not have gotten any action last night after the vodka shots. John Paul laughed and headed off to bed for the morning. John Paul was about the only person in the world, aside from those who were actually out looking for me, who knew my background. He was like a brother to me, despite our bickering and arguing. It was always in good fun. I could trust him, and it was good to have someone to trust. It almost made life bearable. Throw in a couple of women and a bottle of something strong, and suddenly all was good in the world. It was John Paul's idea for me to buy the ablation in the first place, knowing full well I wouldn't object to taking him with me. She was a 105-foot traditional gaff-rigged, three-masted schooner, and she could sleep 12 passengers and a three-person crew. On day trips, we could take nearly 50 out at a time just hanging out on the deck. That money was pretty good, but the big bucks were in taking a few filthy, rich, high-society idiots on their own private pleasure cruise. Usually it was a ritzy family vacation or some debutante on their bachelorette cruise. I got a lot of action on those trips, half the time from the soon-to-be bride. The current excursion was a 5-day sail, running out of San Juan, stopping in the British Virgin Islands for snorkeling or whatever, and then continuing to Anguilla to some high-class resort there. I didn't get involved in any of the tourist crap. I just owned the ship, sailed it during the day, and spent my nights drinking, either on the ship or off. It didn't matter to me. Sometimes I fucked one of the passengers, but that was purely because my hand had gotten tired. I wasn't a people person, and one thing I tried not to do was to associate with any of the passengers at all. If I could avoid even seeing them, that made for the perfect trip. Other than the one sitting under the mast with her book, I hadn't laid eyes on any of them yet, but we had just left port yesterday. I did most of the actual sailing. John Paul did the tour guide shit, and Alejandro, John Paul's bunkmate, did the cooking and whatever else was needed. The three of us knew how to sail most anything, and we all got involved in the mechanics of making the ship go where we needed it to go. I wouldn't even have any passengers, but I had to make an honest living somehow. I didn't have a lot of experience in my nearly 30 years when it came to honest livings. I stubbed the cigarette out and chugged some of the special coffee out of the thermos John Paul left for me. I probably should have had something to eat, but my stomach just wasn't ready for that yet. Maybe a little later. I lit up another smoke. After a couple of hours, the passengers started to wake up and come out on the foredeck where I couldn't help but see them. I usually looked surly enough, they didn't try to spend a lot of time talking to me. But there was always one who would attempt to truly engage me in conversation. I just didn't feel up for it this morning. So, when an overweight balding guy came up and started babbling, I smiled dumbly and responded with, "Yo no hablo inglés," and he left me alone. I chain-smoked and ignored passengers until noon, when I ate a bit of something Alejandro brought up from the galley and let him hold the wheel so I could take a piss. The rest of the afternoon was spent in much the same way. About the time the passengers were having dinner, we arrived in Cruz Bay for the night. They'd spend the rest of the night and next day there with their snorkeling and shopping and whatever the hell else they did on shore. To me, it meant better booze than what I had on the ship, and a good hooker. Once we were docked and John Paul took over for the night, I made my way to the closest drinking hole and ordered 3 shots and a beer. After the shots were gone, I sat back and nursed the long neck, watching the people around me. I saw the chunky guy who tried to talk to me earlier, but he was busy trying to talk to the early rising bookworm girl with dark hair and long legs. I couldn't see her face from where I was sitting, but she had to be 20 years younger than the guy. Unless he was seriously loaded and sporting a 10-inch cock, she was way out of his league. He must not have had either, because she got up and left after just a few minutes of listening to him babble. As she was walking out the door, a black-haired island girl walked in wearing clear-heeled shoes. Just what I needed. I didn't waste any time, but walked right up to her, whispered a number in her ear, watched her eyes light up, and took her back to my cabin. I wondered if she was even 18 as she rode my cock half the night. Not that it mattered around here. 16 was good enough, legally. Being a U.S. man, though, I had a thing against girls under 18. It just didn't seem right. I guess for what I was paying her, she would agree to be whatever age I'd be comfortable screwing. She had really nice tits, and I spent a lot of time sucking on her nipples. She tried to convince me I made her come just from licking them, but I knew the difference between a real orgasm and a fake one. I wasn't doing it for her anyway. I just liked sucking on tits. I didn't need to make her come. She was getting money out of this, not orgasms. She was supposed to make sure I got off, and she didn't disappoint. I did feel her come on me once, so she got her bonus, too. Once I was done with her, I handed her the cash and told her to find her own way home. She smiled, fanned through the bills, and offered to meet up with me the next time I was in the area. Yeah, maybe. She was cute enough. Beats beating off. She left an actual fucking business card on the dresser as she left. Who would have thought they had them? I spent the next day at the same bar, getting way too fucked up to fuck anyone. I stumbled back to the ship about 10 minutes after we were supposed to set sail, flipped John Paul off, puked over the bow, and finally dropped onto the floor of my cabin. I saw a couple of the passengers eyeing me before I slammed my door shut and sealed it. Yep,
The room was definitely spinning this time. Why the fuck did I do this? Again. Because it keeps you from seeing all those faces all night long. Oh, yeah. I lurched into the bathroom and puked again. I tried to get a washcloth wet so I could clean off my face, but I couldn't seem to stand up long enough to reach the sink. I crawled back into the main room of the cabin and managed to get close to my bunk, if not actually on it. I closed my eyes and willed myself to sleep. I woke up when I hit the ceiling of my cabin. Yeah, the ceiling. At first, I figured I was having a nightmare because it didn't make any sense for me to be where I was. Besides, nightmares were a common enough experience in my life. But when I heard the siren going off, I knew whatever was going on, it was really going on. I crawled over the ceiling and reached up to get to the handle of my cabin door. Once I got it open, water started rushing in. I grabbed my belt and wrapped it around my waist, securing it quickly. I could hear wind and rain, but it wasn't heavy. It certainly wasn't heavy enough to cause us to capsize. It was just heavy enough to make it hard to see what was actually going on. I headed aft, wading through water as it poured in, seemingly from all sides. It was almost pitch black, and I could hear screaming coming from the passenger cabins. "Heads up! Lifeboats! Port and starboard!" I yelled out. I couldn't see anyone, but I could still hear them yelling. I thought I heard John Paul's booming voice from behind me, yelling something about a second wave. I felt the whole ship jar and roll again before blinding pain hit the side of my head, followed by darkness. I didn't think I was out long, but I woke up with a mouthful of seawater, choking and coughing. I pulled myself back onto my feet, trying to figure out which way was up. I looked off to my left and saw nothing but water through the gigantic hole in the bulkhead. I went the opposite way, the gaping hole, trying to get my bearings. The only thing I knew for sure was we were right side up again. I slipped on the first step, banged the crap out of one knee, and tried to keep moving through the intense ache. Suddenly, I was topside, staring straight into the broken chunk of the mainmast of the oblation. There was one large torn piece of canvas hanging from a 3-foot section of it. It was all the sail I could see. Whatever hit us hard. I clambered over debris until I came to the port bow and looked over the side. Both lifeboats were gone, but so was half the hull. I made my way back to the other side, confirming the other lifeboat was also gone. Shit. The ablation was starting to tip, and the foredeck was rising up in front of me. I slipped on the wet deck and nearly fell as I made my way back up to the pilot house, where there was, I hoped, a life raft still stowed under the decking. It was there, and I yanked it out of the compartment and ran up to the bow. I looped the painter line around my wrist and threw the whole container in the water. It jerked on my arm and inflated in just a few seconds. I wrapped the line around the bolt near the bow and ran back to what remained of my ship's mainsail. I climbed up as far as I could and yelled out, but heard no one else. Had they all already abandoned ship? Were any of them still below deck? I had no idea how long I was unconscious, and the ship was sinking quickly. I yelled out once more and listened closely before deciding everyone else must have already gotten away, or maybe they had already drowned. Images of Alejandro and John Paul jumped around in my head, but I had to push them away so I could think and react. If there was anything I knew, it was how to deal with panic-inducing survival situations. I hadn't had to do it out at sea before, but I had certainly had my fair share of urban encounters. All right, quite a bit more than my fair share. I took a deep breath, steadied myself, temporarily erased anything non-survival-related from my brain, and mentally prepared myself to jump overboard. I made my way towards the starboard bow as the rain began to pour out of the skies harder, and the wind tossed my hair into my eyes. I reached the end of the line holding the raft and yanked at the bolt. Somehow, I managed to get the line stuck, and the damn thing just wouldn't budge. Another wave crashed up and filled my eyes with salt water. I shook drops from my face and hair and pulled the jackknife out of my belt. I cut the cord, and the lifeboat released from the side of the ship into the rough water. I went tumbling in after it. I hit the water chest and stomach first, which fucking stung and almost caused me to lose my grip on the line. I pulled, hard, arm over arm with my eyes closed tightly, trying to keep the salt water from burning them. I could feel my biceps starting to fatigue, and the muscle pain shot up into my shoulders. I kept pulling, kicking my bare feet in the water to try to get a little more leverage. The rain continued to pelt my back, and the wind drove waves up and over my head. I wrapped my hand around the loose rope and finally got to the life preserver connected to the side of the raft. I pulled the thing off the side and wrapped it around one shoulder before the next wave knocked me under again.
I came up sputtering and used the rope to guide me to the rungs on the side of the raft. Finally, I touched something solid and reached up, hauling myself over the edge and dropping hard on the bottom of the small life raft. I took a second to calm my panting breaths while I lay on my back, with the rain stinging my skin. I rolled over and coughed, removing the water still in my mouth and lungs, and looked out over the waves. I could see well enough to know the ablation was pretty much completely destroyed. The storm was minor, and there was no way it would have been the cause of all the damage I could see from where I was. I rolled quickly and pulled at one of the sealed plastic containers tucked into the side of the raft. I retrieved a signal whistle and blew it 3 times. Nothing. No response. No yelling. Nothing. I blew again. And again. Pieces of the mast floated into view on the top of one of the waves, along with part of a sail and something I thought might have been a chunk of futtock. Someone's suitcase rose up on a swell and then slowly began to sink. It went past something wavy and oddly shaped, like a bunch of snakes all coiled together. I couldn't figure out what it was and rubbed at my eyes. When the wave slipped back down, I saw it again. It wasn't part of the ship, and I was relatively sure it was one of the passengers. The water was too rough to try a maneuver in the right direction, so I grabbed the life preserver and dived in. I swam under and reached whoever it was, just in time to grab a hold of strands of hair and coil them around my fist right before they dropped too low in the water for me to have hopes of latching on. If the person had worn a shorter hairstyle, I wouldn't have been able to reach. Thankfully, whoever it was didn't weigh much and didn't struggle. Shit. I could be risking my life for a body. Another wave hit just as I was taking a breath, and I took in a mouthful of water. I didn't actually inhale, but I didn't get any air either, and my lungs were starting to burn. I pulled up on the hair in my fist until I could get a better grip on the actual torso. I managed to grab what was, undoubtedly, a boob, so at least I knew I was saving a woman. I pulled her up against my chest and leaned back, trying to simultaneously float on my back, use the life preserver to keep me above the wave swells, and keep the head of one of my passengers above water. I got a couple of good breaths and started to pull in the rope. The added weight wasn't helping when the waves crashed around us. More than once, I considered just letting her go, because my arms were starting to hurt really, really bad. I didn't know who she was, but I couldn't quite manage to intentionally let go of her. If one of the waves took her from me, well, that would be a different situation. But I wasn't going to just let go of her, no matter how much it hurt. I may be a mostly uncaring ass, but that was going too far. Besides, I'd been hurt a lot worse than this and still pushed through. My hand touched the end of the lifeboat, and I struggled to pull both of us over the side. I got her in first, and then tumbled in after her. I was balanced on my knees in one hand, breathing heavily with the other hand over my chest. The rain still poured down on me, and I knew I didn't have any time to rest. I mentally yelled at my muscles to get going again and sat up. I leaned over the chest of the woman I'd pulled from the water, just to check. She wasn't breathing. Fuck! I quickly pulled her upright and flipped her over my back, pushing my shoulder into her diaphragm. Her mouth dropped open and water released from her lungs, pouring out of her mouth. I flipped her over onto her back and tilted her head to open her airway, checking her mouth for any obstructions. A for airway, B for breath, C for circulation. Her airway was clear, but she still wasn't breathing. I placed the first 2 fingers of my hand against her neck and felt the faintest thump of her heartbeat under the pads of my fingers. If she had a pulse, she must have been breathing recently, which meant she still had a chance. I placed my hand on her forehead, tilted her head back, and covered her mouth with mine. I blew a long, slow breath into her lungs, then tilted my head to the side and watched her chest fall. I turned back to her mouth and breathed into her a second and third time. My fingers went back to her neck and verified her pulse was still there before I breathed for her in another 3-breath segment. It didn't take long, thankfully. I was exhausted, and there wasn't much chance of me being able to continue resuscitation for very long. If she had needed chest compressions, we were going to be in a lot of trouble. After only 12 breaths, she coughed, sputtered out more water, and then took several gasping breaths before passing out across my lap. At least she kept breathing on her own, and her pulse felt a lot stronger. I took a couple of deep breaths for my own lungs and turned my face up to the sky with my mouth open, drinking in the raindrops and hoping the raft was set up to automatically start collecting the fresh water. I was going to have to check that before I did anything else. Fatigue now was bad, but it was still better than dehydration later. I figured I would locate John Paul and the better-equipped lifeboats when the sun rose, but I didn't want to be wrong. Thankfully, the water collection did seem to be set to go. I just needed to attach a little collection tube from the built-in gutter and the ceiling of the raft to the plastic collection bag inside. I pulled the canopy over the top part of the raft, sealing it and leaving just a small part open, so I could bail out the water that had already gotten in from the rain and the waves. I was feeling a little dizzy and figured I wasn't going to be able to do much more. Every muscle in my body was screaming at me to just sit down for a minute. The thing was, if I did stop, that would be it. I'd be out in a second, and if I didn't do the important stuff first, we were both going to die before I woke up. I looked back over to the girl I pulled from the water and heard myself gasp as I saw red marks all over the floor. I reached to her and turned her over, checking her back, under her hair, and up and down her limbs, but I didn't see any sign of injury. While I was laying her back down, I saw a drop of red fall and hit her shoulder, so I reached up to my own forehead. I guess I hadn't noticed it since the rain and seawater kept washing the blood away, but there was a pretty good gash on my left temple. It probably wasn't too serious, though still worthy of stitches. Head wounds meant blood, so there was a lot of blood. I dug around in one of the sealed pouches until I found the first aid supplies. I covered up the cut with some gauze and tape. Hopefully I'd find John Paul in the morning so he could stitch it up. Like I needed another scar. At least it was up near my hairline and would probably be covered up most of the time. I checked myself over for any other injuries but didn't see anything. I took a quick inventory of what was on the life raft and found two thin pieces of cloth that were probably supposed to be used as both towels and blankets. Maybe even sails, though they weren't big enough to make any difference at sea. I used one to dry off the floor in the back of the raft and pulled the drenched girl back away from the raft's opening, near the dry spot. I tried to make her at least look comfortable, and as I moved her arms and legs so she didn't look too awkward, it briefly registered that the passenger I pulled from the water was the early rising bookworm. Of course, now that I had pulled her over to the dry side of the raft, it wasn't so dry anymore. Fuck it. I looked out and watched the ablation as it finally gave up and sank under the waves. She had been my home for 3 years, and now she was gone. I wouldn't let myself wonder about John Paul or Alejandro or the other passengers. The lifeboats were gone, so I was going with the assumption that the rest of them were on board one of those. In daylight, I should be able to signal them. I made my body continue on. I dropped the two floating anchors and affixed the rest of the canopy, sealing us inside the life raft. Everything was well secured. I had the water collection going, and I wasn't bleeding anymore. I checked my sole passenger's breathing again and watched the last pieces of my home sink into the darkened sea. I took one more deep breath, flopped onto my back next to her, and finally surrendered to exhaustion. I guess I really didn't need a schooner after all.
Chapter 2. Heat. I woke to screaming.
Holy shit! I sat up in complete darkness and reached around towards the noise until I got a hold of the girl's arm. She swung at me wildly, so I gripped both her wrists to keep her from hitting me as she continued to scream.
Come on, babe, relax. It's all right. You're all right.
She went from screaming to throwing herself against my chest and clinging to me. I let go of her wrists and felt her hands go up and over my shoulders with her nails digging into the skin on my back and her sobs shaking both her body and mine. Comforting someone else was definitely not a strong point of mine. I just didn't do that. I rarely even wanted to touch a girl after I fucked her. I didn't have the slightest idea where to put my hands, and I couldn't even see her anyway, but she was holding on to me and didn't show any signs of letting go. I was too damn tired to argue with her about it, so I didn't push her away. I mean, she did almost die, and though I didn't really want to think about it, I knew how far we were from land. If we found the others at first light, we'd probably be okay, but otherwise our chances weren't all that great. So I let her hold on to me, and I even put my arms around her awkwardly. She kept crying, and I didn't say anything because I had no idea what I should say. I guess I could have lied to her and told her everything was fine, but I didn't think there was much point in that. I reached over and grabbed the waterproof flashlight from its sealed bag, secured it in one of the loops on the inside of the raft, and turned it on. She jumped when the light went on, and her breathing caught in her throat as she let out a soft sob. Her fingers dug into my flesh again, but not quite as hard as before. I didn't think she was actually breaking the skin or anything. She glanced quickly around the raft, pressed her cheek into my chest, and closed her eyes. She went still, kind of suddenly, and I listened to make sure she hadn't stopped breathing again. I noticed her breathing was now really steady and figured she must have passed out or maybe just fallen back asleep. I didn't want to wake her up and listen to her start screaming again, and I really, really wanted to lie back down.
I shuffled our positions around a bit until I managed to lie down on my back with her still sprawled over my chest, holding tightly to my shoulders even in sleep. It wasn't comfortable, not in the least. I was still completely exhausted and figured I'd drop right back off anyway, but I was wrong. Between her lying on top of me and the crashing waves and wind from outside the canopy, I couldn't fall back asleep at all. I sighed heavily and looked down at the young woman lying on top of me, bathed in the light of the flashlight. She was in her early 20s, maybe, with long hair, bits of which were plastered all over her face, shoulders, and back. She was slim and wore a blue one-piece bathing suit with a pair of shorts on over it and no shoes on her feet. If she had been in flip-flops or sandals like a lot of the ship's passengers wore, she probably lost them to the storm. She had really nice skin, all smooth and lightly tanned all over, not like a lot of chicks who were tanned with blotches and shit when she didn't get her suntan lotion put on in the right place. I kind of wanted to run my hands over it and see if it was as soft as it looked, but I figured that probably had its own special scale of inappropriateness. It reminded me of warm caramel, and I had the idiotic notion that she might taste like caramel, too. I settled for checking out the rest of her visually instead. She was pretty small. I didn't think she could have been much over 5'2" and maybe 120 pounds or so. Next to my 6'2", 10 years of bodybuilding frame, she looked like a child. I could probably lift her over my head with one hand. Of course, she had been lying on top of me for a while now, and she was starting to feel a little heavier. Her leg shifted, and holy fuck if she didn't rub her thigh up against my groin. We were in a life raft, for the love of God, in the middle of the fucking Caribbean, and I was getting a hard-on from a half-drowned stranger lying on top of me. Well, at least we know I'm still a guy. She was kind of hot, from what I could tell anyway. She was also breathing and female, which is all I usually required. I tried to remember what her boob felt like when I grabbed it in the water, but I had been a little too preoccupied with trying to stay alive to commit it to memory. Damn, I was fucked up. Besides, she was just another one of the high society bitches that chartered ships for their little personal pleasure cruises because they were far too good for the normal cruise ships that went all over the place carrying normal people. She wasn't my type, and I definitely wasn't hers. My type was more likely to cost me a little cash, but at least I knew where I stood, and I didn't have to call them later or buy them any fucking flowers. Who knew what her type might be? One thing I knew, I didn't have the blue blood that was always the top requirement on the list. Maybe if I took a shower and shaved, she'd probably look me over and maybe consider giving me a tumble. In the end, I wouldn't be good enough to wash her chihuahua. I must have fallen asleep eventually, because the next thing I knew, there was natural light coming through the translucent sides of the raft, and it was really getting hot. This was partially because the sun was cooking us in there, but also because I had a sweaty girl lying on me. I slid out from under her, cringing when our stuck-together skin peeled apart audibly. I set her down relatively gently and scooted myself over to the raft canopy opening. I pulled back the seal and opened up the front piece, nearly blinding myself as the sunlight flooded in. I took a deep breath and shook my head, trying to get the sleep out of my system. My head was pounding, but without my usual spiked morning coffee and half-pack of cigarettes, I didn't think it was going to improve anytime soon. My arms and shoulders were sore and my back was stiff. It was also really fucking hot in what was basically a small greenhouse on the ocean with the equatorial sun beating down on it. All in all, I felt like shit. The waves were a lot calmer than they had been the previous night, thankfully. I glanced back over at the girl who was still out of it, and then whipped open my fly and pissed over the side. I managed to tuck myself back in just as she rolled a little and groaned. Not that I really cared, but she probably didn't want to wake up to me waving my cock around. She only murmured something unintelligible and stilled, not yet awake. I looked over the horizon and saw water. I maneuvered partway out of the small opening in the canopy and looked all the way around us. More water. Shit. With no sign of any other lifeboats, I had to fight down the nervousness I was starting to feel in the pit of my stomach. The life raft was equipped with 3 days' worth of food and water for 4 people. I could collect more water as long as it rained, and I could certainly make the food last for more than 6 days, probably as many as 10 or 12, but after that it was going to get nasty. I looked over at the sleeping form behind me. With her size, she was going to dehydrate fast. She was probably on the verge anyway, considering the amount of seawater she swallowed. I'd last a lot longer than she would. My stomach lurched a little again. It occurred to me I hadn't felt that particular pang since the last time I was in a tournament. I crouched with my head out of the opening and secured the flap to the top of the raft. In the back of the raft, near the sleeping passenger, was another smaller opening. I released that one, too, so we could get a crosswind going through the inside of the raft. It wasn't going to make much of a difference with the heat, but it was marginally better than nothing. I really wanted a drink.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?